Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
3, 2, 1, hit it.
Chris Rongi, Amy Marks Kors, The Chris and Amy Show.
You know who it is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called the show.
Yeah. On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Hey, good morning. Tuesday already? Man.
Oh, man.
Look at this week flying by.
I thought it was Wednesday.
Damn it. I felt the exact same way.
That's weird.
I was like, oh, good. It's Wednesday. We're halfway there. Mm-hmm. More than halfway there.
It is. I don't want people to get mad, but it's the heat. It's a little heavy and makes time move more slowly.
Don't worry, though. The heat's going to break in a day or so. We'll be okay.
I think it's supposed to break tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like tonight. They extended it. It was supposed to break today.
All they do is extend heat advisories.
Do you know what I think they did? I think they took the messaging strategy of the COVID people. 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks. That's how long it'll be. Maybe a month. Maybe the 4th of July. That's what they've done with the heat.
Who the hell said 2 weeks?
COVID.
Like that was going to last for two weeks?
The shutdown was 2 weeks. That's the most famous thing in the world.
How do you not remember that? Is it the most famous thing in the world?
314-436-7900.
Oh, here we go with the COVID truthers.
See, I do think sometimes I worry about your mental acuity because there's got to be some...
That was not the most famous thing about COVID.
Who's back there? No, it is. It's James.
No, it's not. It's for people who are deniers like you.
The most famous thing is that everyone said it would be 2 weeks because I remember thinking, oh man, we're never going to be
shut down.
We knew
it was going to be two weeks. You know how we knew that?
Because Colonel Ripper says most famous.
Well, Colonel Ripper's a psychopath.
No, I've seen
Colonel Ripper watching on YouTube.
This is not a controversy. This is not a liberal or conservative thing. We're gonna shut down for 2 weeks. This is like why all the memes are like, remember when they said it was gonna be 2 weeks?
So we knew it wasn't gonna be 2 weeks
because I'm taking crazy pills.
In Italy, they were shut down forever before we got shut down. So we knew it was gonna be 2 weeks. Yeah, Colonel Ripper's nuts, but we do appreciate him watching on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, and you can comment on all of those, and we'd love to see your comments. You can leave us a voice message on the Odyssey app, AUDACY, where you can also listen to the show and listen to the podcasts and everything else, all right there. Follow us on Twitter at ChrisAmyKMOX.
Time now for the top of the order, the top three stories everyone will be talking about.
Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey is no longer the Missouri Attorney General because he is now the Deputy Director of the FBI. He was appointed by President Trump yesterday.
And the St. Charles Data Center is dead for now after developers withdraw the application. It seems that the people of St. Charles said no.
And the people were heard. Cardinals end their 5-game losing streak. They won over the Marlins in Miami. The series continues tonight. We have the first pitch of 5:40 right here on KMOX. So as we mentioned, and you've heard the news today. In fact, the news broke yesterday early evening, late afternoon, that the Attorney General, Andrew Bailey, has been appointed Deputy Director of the FBI. So we are expecting to hear who his replacement is going to be this morning. At least that is the plan. So the Governor Mike Kehoe is going to make that announcement. And as soon as we find out who it is, we're going to tell you who it is. So you'll want to be listening to KMOX this morning. And really, you should just be listening all day.
You're plugged into the betting world.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a betting market.
How quickly can you put up a betting market? 20 minutes?
Well, I mean, I don't know how long it takes to do that.
But what's the quickest turnaround you've ever seen for something that happened in the world, and then the odds?
I don't know. That's a great question. Yeah, because usually the stuff that I end up seeing odds for are things that we've known about for a little bit, right? So, yeah, I don't know. I'm sure they could put something together. I think anybody could slap something together.
So,
but you couldn't bet on this domestically. You would have to go overseas. Not go overseas, but use like an offshore book.
Oh,
like,
really?
It's kind of not
for
legal.
For politics?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
you can't bet domestically on that.
So when people were betting on the presidential election, you had to do offshore gambling?
Yeah.
It's kind of exciting. I've never done anything that required me to be offshore, but I kind of want to.
I was surprised
by this.
Sounds
exciting.
We talked to Derek Stevens, the CEO of Circa Resort, and Circa is one of the two untethered betting apps, the sports apps that are coming to us in Missouri.
Okay.
It's DraftKings and it'll be Circa. And he said, this is according to him, that still, even with all of these brand new sports books and all of these new apps that people are using, 75% of all the betting that takes place in the country is illegal.
Well,
with all of the legalization of everything here. So I was really stunned to hear that. But at any rate, no, you cannot bet on who the new attorney general is going to be.
Okay, well, the Missouri Times, in reporting on Missouri's AG shakeup, they put out their short list of potential picks. Here are a few of their leading contenders. Senator David Gregory. We spoke with him. He was the state senator who brought up the bounty.
It was the bounty thing, yes.
Yeah.
It was like $1,000 if you reported somebody who was illegal.
Mm-hmm. Senator Tony Lukemeyer, respected attorney and influential voice in the Missouri Senate. Former Speaker Catherine Hanaway, the architect of Red Missouri. Hanaway, they say, is a trailblazer in Missouri politics and a seasoned attorney. Here's my vote, Treasurer Vivek Malik. He is Missouri's current state treasurer and an accomplished attorney. He made history as the first person of Indian descent to hold a statewide office in Missouri. He's got a strong legal background, and I like him because he's always concerned about my stuff. You know, you hear the commercials about how you might have unclaimed stuff.
Listen,
like that. I mean, not very many people are worried about other people's stuff.
So,
and he is.
Yeah, kind of like the state treasurer in Illinois who was concerned about my stuff, Michael Frerichs, who gave me back my property. It was like $128 I had from the state of Illinois from like 20 years ago from wages.
128?
Yeah, it was like 128. I had a couple of old paychecks from
a new pair of nice shoes.
I know remember I worked at the restaurant. I worked at Dick's Last Resort, and I guess I had
one
unclaimed. I had a paycheck.
I didn't even know how I had the check.
I have no idea how I had that much money from because checks are nothing.
I know, and from that long ago,
yeah,
that's like the equivalent of $50,000.
It's crazy.
Today.
It's crazy. So
it is.
I got all this money from the state of Illinois last year. Go, you should do that if you're in Missouri.
Yeah.
If you're in Illinois, it's like you go to the Illinois Treasury website and you can do it. Or you can just Google like unclaimed property in Missouri or Illinois and you put your name in, you find out if there's money coming your way.
Yep. Well, anyway, like I said, you hear Treasurer Vivek Malik's voice on the radio. I think he sounds like a nice guy. I think he does. I don't know him. Another option would be Senator Nick Schorr. He's very active on the Twitter.
He is.
Yep. Pretty active. Chris Limbaugh, who has a name that carries, quote, considerable weight in Missouri politics. Tim Garrison, a former U.S. attorney for the Western District of Missouri. Bill Corrigan, a prominent St. Louis attorney and former GOP for St. Louis County Executive. And Lieutenant Governor Dave Wasinger, who is, well, currently the lieutenant governor and an experienced attorney. It's a good list.
Well, so let's hope whoever it is. And I wonder how Kehoe is going, what direction he'll go here, if he will go somebody more moderate, because he appears to me to be a more moderate governor personally. So I guess we'll find out from him. But
well,
I'm curious to know the direction he's going to take.
There's a couple of ways to look at moderate. Like you could look at moderate as far as on the political spectrum.
Like somebody like
beliefs,
Nick Schorr is not moderate.
But that's what I mean. Or someone who is also very, very political. And I get that all of these guys have political ties, but like Tim Garrison, former U.S. attorney for the Western District of Missouri, you know, I don't think he's run for public office. Bill Corrigan was a GOP nominee for St. Louis County Executive. He's a prominent St. Louis attorney. And you could say, well, of course he's political, but also if you're running for a Republican county executive, you know you're going to lose. So he gave it the old college try. So I don't know if it would be someone that you would call as lesser known versus someone like a Nick Schwer, who is a firebrand who likes to get that social media attention.
Yeah, I don't think we need that. We don't need, to me, I would like an attorney general that is focused on Missouri and really Missouri alone and not worried about making a name for himself on the national stage. Those are the people that I would like to serve Missouri. Now, you have United States senators that have to take on national issues. Mm-hmm. That's just the nature of being a senator. So that's different. But I want somebody in that office that is focused on Missouri and cares only about Missouri.
So the Attorney General of Missouri, you know, and there are always certain stepping stones when it comes to national politics and where you start at the state level. Obviously, governor is a big one. If you want to become a senator or you want to become president of the United States, governor is a big one. But Missouri Attorney General has been a stepping stone for Josh Hawley, who is now a U.S. senator, for Eric Schmidt, who is now a U.S. senator, and for Andrew Bailey, who is now the deputy director of the FBI, along with Dan Bongino. Interestingly, this move of Trump to pull Andrew Bailey into deputy director position does seem to be a way to not challenge, but perhaps to hit Dan Bongino for his persistence in pursuing the Epstein files. And Dan Bongino spoke out, was very vocal, not being happy with President Trump not releasing the Epstein files.
It sort of seems like his time there is
limited.
Limited.
He's pushed it too much. And we did say this, that while the news moves so quickly and there are so many controversies that, you know, will the Epstein files, this whole issue with Trump saying only losers are still talking about the Epstein files, does this have any staying power? And while it might not have completely split MAGA, you are going to see some casualties. Dan Bongino has not been fired, but it might be a slow death for him where he becomes less influential.
Sort of fades out.
Yeah,
that's exactly what this feels
and
like.
And so I do think there will be some casualties from the Epstein issue because this was a huge issue on the MAGA side, the magic MAGA contingent. A lot of people, for them, it was a big issue.
So when Governor Kehoe announces the replacement for Attorney General Andrew Bailey, we will have it for you right here on KMOX. You're going to want to stay tuned
us.
Legally.
Oh.
You don't want to get in trouble. They're going to have to be friendly wagers. Like, where there are no real stakes.
No real stakes.
Okay. I'm not talking about the stakes that caught fire on the highway in Missouri. We're talking about stakes.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to come back with our question of the week, but also, Ranj, I'm going to bet you a dollar, and you need to pick your guy.
Okay.
And you bet a dollar. And then is this illegal if we actually have to give each other a dollar?
I told you, no money. We can't do money.
Well, this is not for the listeners. It's just between you and
me. Yeah, we can't do money.
Okay, we're not, wink, wink,
we're
giving each other a
dollar. We're not betting money. All right, I'm going to think about it.
Okay.
I'm going to have an answer for you when we come back. And we'll bring you our question of the week. John Hancock is going to join the show at 11:30, and we'll talk about this move. And hopefully by then we'll know who the new AG is going to be. So we'll get his thoughts on this. You're listening to the Chris and Amy Show, and we love you for it. It's KMOX.
Chris Ranji, Amy Mark Scores with you. And as we mentioned earlier, we are awaiting Governor Mike Kehoe's appointment of the next attorney general or the new or interim attorney general since Andrew Bailey was named by Trump to become deputy director of the FBI alongside Dan Bongino. So now we need a new AG. Allegedly, we're not supposed to bet on this. So I picked my bet. My vote is Treasurer Vivek Malik. I like his voice. I think he seems like a nice guy. He's always concerned about my stuff. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
So
your unclaimed property.
My unclaimed property. That's right. So I'm rooting for Vivek Malik. Now, Ron is going to pick this person.
Can I just real quick, let me give you a thought.
Yeah.
And I want you to process this.
Okay.
Do you maybe not want him to take the job? Because if he does, who's going to look out for your stuff?
Well, that's the thing. I've never had any stuff.
Okay, well, who's going to look out for everybody else's stuff?
Well, not my problem. Not my stuff.
So, what a conservative point of view. I don't care about anybody else, just me. Okay, here's what I'll say. Yeah. I'm going with Bill Corrigan because I love the Smashing Pumpkins.
You know what? They didn't put that and in his bio.
I think Bill Corrigan, he'll be a great, not just a front man of one of my favorite 90s bands, but he's also going to be a terrific attorney general.
You know what? That's a dark horse pick,
mm-hmm.
Billy Corrigan.
Yeah.
To be honest, I didn't know that he ran for St. Louis County Executive.
I didn't either. But I did see him in the one time I met him was here.
He was here.
Here
maybe
at KMOX.
That was his county executive push.
Yeah.
All right,
it's also not the same guy.
But let's pretend it is. So Ron just picking Smashing Pumpkins' Bill Corrigan to be the next attorney general. I am picking the state treasurer, Vivek Malik, and... Ranj says that legally I have to say that we are not betting.
It's a gentleman's bet.
We're not betting each other $1.
This is a, well, we can bet other stakes. It can be, okay, how about this? Whoever loses mm-hmm. has to jump out the window.
Okay, first of all, great idea.
I didn't say which window.
Yeah, great idea. These windows don't open.
Well.
I think we're behind bulletproof glass. Makes you wonder what's going on around here.
It's soundproof. It's not bulletproof. It's soundproof, Amy.
I don't know, man.
We can't have the sirens outside interrupting the broadcast.
We have spouted off some opinions that maybe, you know.
That's not what it's about.
I think it's bulletproof.
It's for sound fidelity. We just want it to sound as good as possible for you, the listener.
Sound fidelity.
That's what we care. That's why we care about you. That's probably redundant when I said sound fidelity. I think you just say fidelity.
No, I don't think so. Because fidelity, like, what do you mean? Like, you're not going to cheat on me? Because your lover can't get through the window?
All right. So we have our bets. Amy is going with Vivek, the only Vivek she likes. And I am going.
The best Vivek.
The best Vivek. And I am going with Bill Corrigan of the Smashing Pumpkins. That's who I am choosing. That's who I think is going to win. What is our question of the week, Amy?
Oh my gosh, it's a good one. So as we know, all the kids are back in school now because we had the soft launch of school last week. We had the real launch of school, the 25-26 school year, yesterday. So our question is for our listeners. Will you let your kids use ChatGPT or AI for homework?
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yes or no. We're not giving you, there's no nuance. There are no subtle distinctions. It's just a yes or no. And that's on @ChrisAmyKMOX on Twitter.
See.
I know my answer.
It's no.
That's right.
I feel conflicted about this because I want nuance. Because there probably are good uses for it that don't completely replace actually doing the work and don't replace actually learning about the subject matter?
Because sometimes, you know, with school, you think, well, I'm never going to use this skill. Well, it's not just about the skill. It's also the building the muscles, building
your brain
persistence,
right.
Building your brain muscles. The synapses are firing, right? I can say that, yes, there are probably work, corporate environments where AI is useful. For instance, if you're in marketing or in sales and you keep putting the same decks together, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of busy work and you have to keep summarizing your ideas. I absolutely believe that in marketing or whatever sales, whatever it may be, you're putting together these decks that you always have to do for endless meetings. I can see how AI is helpful. That's very different than young formative brains learning how to persist through, if nothing else, boring things. It's important to have self-discipline.
There's a reason that when you're doing a math test, they want you to show the work.
Yes.
Right? It's about the process and learning the process. But I do think, and I don't know artificial intelligence well enough because I'm not using it daily.
Mm-hmm.
It is a good jump-off point if you're looking for brainstorming ideas that you could then build off of yourself. If you're doing stuff like that, I think it's perfectly fine, you know, to go that direction. But if you're having it do all the work for you, that doesn't help anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also think, though, kids need to learn how to brainstorm. I taught a
class on you're not wrong. Yeah.
You know, with sure. drawing circles and how does, and then filling in those circles with different ideas and different topics, and one topic leads to another. And it's amazing how, for instance, writing an essay, writing a book, fiction, nonfiction, you have to do the grunt work of brainstorming. And one reason why brainstorming is so hard is because it takes so long. And a lot of times you may have nothing substantive to show for it for 2-3 days a week. We think about brainstorming for the show. I can sit in the room for 2 hours with Matt and we come up with a lot of stupid ideas, but eventually you land on one. But that's a lot of quote unquote.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Quote, wasted time. But it's not wasted time. It's brainstorming and it's a skill.
It does exercise that muscle of problem solving.
Yes.
Which I don't think has, I don't think humanity wants to lose that, right? So I think it's really important. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji. When we come back, we're going to talk to Tim Lucchini, who is the CEO of a local company called Intramotive. And it's a startup and it is sort of, the idea is revolutionizing the freight cars and how we use them. And it's a seems like a good thing that it's happening here in St. Louis. We'll have him explain what his company does and how it could end up being very big. That is next on KMOX.
Chris Ranji, Amy Marks Scores with you. And joining us now in studio is Tim Lucchini. He is the CEO of Intramotive, which is a St. Louis-based startup. And it is converting conventional freight cars into battery-powered, self-propelled rail cars. A really cool idea that, Tim, as I just said, this reading about your company, reading about what you're doing, has really just exposed my lack of vision, how you take things for granted. So thank you for joining us.
No, it's awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
So with Intramotive, I guess it was new to me. Imagine it might be new to our listeners. What does it mean that you have these freight cars that are electric, like electric trains?
Yeah, exactly. So if you think of a train today, it might be 2 miles in length, and it might be the width of Manhattan, a major city of stuff that all has to move together. What it really means is access. So we can drive single units to end facilities like a manufacturing facility or like a warehouse where you might need one rail car worth of goods. You might not need 2 miles of stuff all at once. And now we can provide that access to these types of facilities. And today we're actively deployed in use cases like mining, like plant railroads, things that might be out of sight, out of mind for a lot of people, but really do serve as the starting point for these types of technologies to go out and be in the wild.
So the way it works now, is it that you've got, you know, all these different cars with different items on them, maybe different companies are shipping things, right? And you have to wait for the engine to pull everybody's goods. This would eliminate that, right? Like you, because I'm assuming there's a schedule and you kind of have to go by whatever the rail schedule is. This would sort of eliminate that where you can move things quicker.
Yeah. So the way to think about it really is that that would still exist where we play, which is what we've built as a self-propelled asset. You can think of a truck on rails and that can run in three ways. The first way is it can run on its own independently, point to point. The second mode is it can pull 1 to 5 traditional rail cars with it. And that gives you the unit economics of this 2 mile long train, but with 1 to 5 units at a time. And then the last mode is if it's in that long train, it turns the whole train into a hybrid. So you can start to decarbonize and get the electric propulsion system, take loads off the diesel engine and go across the country. But there's reasons to have each one of those modes of operation and we can do all of them.
So it'd be sort of like having an engine in the middle of if you had a really long 1 mile or 2 mile train, it'd be like the electric cars would be pulling some of the load, yep. is what you're saying.
And I know you have some rail fans out there, so they already do that. They'll have 2 or 3 locomotives in a train set to yep. be able to pull all those goods. The second or third locomotive in that train is not going to be providing anything other than power to the rest of the train. And we do that exact same thing, just in a granular way with batteries as the primary energy storage system.
So if it is a more granular way where it's 1 to 5 cars, say, if someone's listening and thinking, well, then why wouldn't, isn't that trucking? Isn't that what cross-country truckers do? So how would this better fill a need than the trucking industry?
Yeah, so first off, rail is still huge. So you have $700 billion worth of goods moving across the country and 160,000 miles of track across the country. What trucking does better today is speed and flexibility. So if I want to go from St. Louis here to Kansas City, I can have a truck come to my factory and pick something up and be in Kansas City in 4.5 hours, where rail today might be the lower cost option. It might be a tenth of the cost of that semi-truck, but it might take 4, 5, 6, maybe 7 days to get that route run. And so that speed and flexibility is a huge part of what we can offer and make the rail system more competitive as a whole.
So it's just cheaper. It might take a little longer, but it's just cheaper.
Today, when you look at the way that rail has run from the 1860s to today, it's always had a cost advantage. And that's driven a lot by infrastructure and scale. So you have these massive units that are running across the country.
And so I've heard you say that there's more track than there is highway in the country, right? Which doesn't seem... It seems like we are so focused on cars and highway and trucks and all of that. So I'm a little surprised to hear there's more track line.
There's a ton of track going everywhere. And the reason that you don't experience it, or even before I got into this industry, didn't really experience it, because it's out of sight, out of mind, and it's dedicated to freight already. So we don't have a ton of passenger traffic. We don't have these really high density passenger routes like Europe has. What we have is a ton of raw materials through to finished automobiles coming out of Ford's factories running on rails. And that's how this backbone of the supply chain for almost any industry works. And that's why it's so critical. And that's also why when something happens in rail, you see the whole world pause for a second and pay attention. And it's because of how critical it is as part of our infrastructure.
This may be a dumb question, because obviously you're going to have companies with bigger materials, raw materials, whatever it may be, that are using rail would love this system. Is this something that even a mass distributor of finished products like an Amazon would use?
Yeah, absolutely. So you'll see Amazon move things on rail. Mm-hmm. You'll see Ford move things on rail. I don't know what kind of cars you guys drive, but most likely it came out of a factory and went immediately into a rail car. And so you have that end of the supply chain where you have your finished goods coming out. You also have the raw materials coming out of the ground. So if I need calcium, manganese, all these periodic table of raw materials or anything that's getting farmed, all that's moving on rail too. So at the very beginning part of the supply chain, all the way through the finished end good products, you have rail as part of that backbone.
So why do this in St. Louis? Why base it here? I know that we have a history in the past where we were the center of rail transportation, not so much like that anymore. So why pick this particular location?
St. Louis is a great place to be for a huge number of reasons. We've gotten a great support from the community in what we're building. Also, if I want to move anywhere in the country, I can access it from St. Louis. So we have access to 6 Class 1 railroads. We have access to a good host of major terminal operators and short lines. And that's a huge important piece, because if I go anywhere else in the country, they'll ask, which Class 1 railroad do you want to be connected to? But outside the back of our factory and through terminal railroad, we can access the entire country. And that's a huge benefit that St. Louis has. Again, it's out of sight, out of mind for most people that aren't experiencing the rail system in that way, but it's a huge advantage. And then on top of it, the workforce here is amazing. The team that we've built is awesome, having access to the right people, and proving that we don't have to do this in San Francisco or New York. We can do this right here in a community like St. Louis that can lean in and be technology forward as a community.
You know, when we're thinking of, you know, battery-powered electric rail, a lot of people, they're experience with, you know, electric would be like electric vehicles, and obviously they have their pros and cons with the batteries and the way the batteries respond differently to heat or to cold. How different or similar are these rail cars to what the average person knows about an EV?
Yeah, so the beauty of rail is the efficiency of it. So the right-of-ways at all the crossings means you don't have to start and stop a lot. They have 0% grades for a good amount of the track, which means you're not climbing up hills or anything. You're going through mountains instead of over them. That adds a bunch of energy efficiency that's just innate in the system. And then on top of it, the automotive industry went so fast and aggressive towards electric vehicles that we're actually using the same types of power systems, the same type of motors, same types of sensors and perception systems that the auto industry has used in a way that rail couldn't have done this on their own, but we're leveraging a system that might have 200 kilowatt hours of battery. And I drive an F-150 Lightning, so I have 131 kilowatt hours of capacity in that pickup truck. So our rail car systems aren't that much bigger than what you would get from one of those EVs. That also means the charging infrastructure is there. We can answer that question. The supply chain questions are there. And we can provide a complete system to our customers that gives you a system that can pull several hundred miles of range with a vehicle that's 286,000 pounds. So that's three times the weight of a traditional semi-truck when you look at how heavy that is. And that's just the efficiency of rail at play that makes battery electric work on that scale. And then if you do want to go to St. Louis to Chicago or St. Louis to the Port of Long Beach, you can run that with a traditional train set and we can fit in that train.
So it does work long distance. You wouldn't, because we think of electric vehicles, so we would have to stop halfway to Chicago and charge up.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. The key to what we're doing is it's backwards compatible. So if you turn our system off, we have all the standard couplers, air brakes, safety mechanisms that you're going to see with a rail car today, so that we can just go along in that train and go across the country in that long haul route. And then as battery tech gets better or anything else that comes that might be a breakthrough, we can implement that as well.
So, dumb question. What is the charging mechanism for this?
Yeah, we use level 2 chargers, just like the automotive EV space does. So you can use a level 2 AC or level 2 DC charger. And really what that means is that the infrastructure has been sized and supported, and a lot of the standards and specifications are there, and we can just plug right into that same ecosystem.
So what has growth been like in terms of business for you? And if this sort of sounds like it, we're going to move this direction anyway, that, you know, whether it's this company or another company that does it, we're going to utilize this technology. So how much growth has there been?
Yeah, it's been a great amount of growth, and we're 5 years old, so we're still a relatively young company, but we started with 3 people, an idea, no resources, no customers, and now we've grown to 50 people here in St. Louis, customers that are using this every single day. We're going to move roughly 1 million tons of material this year in production for customers. We're going to move over 14,000 carloads of goods in production in revenue service. So that's a massive amount of growth, and then you can look at the total tonnages in rail and the amount of material that's moved, and we have a ton of potential to continue to grow and grow this team and grow, like you said, this future will exist, and we're excited to be the ones that are bringing it to life.
And you, as we mentioned earlier, you're from Ohio, lived in Michigan, spent some time in South Dakota or North Dakota.
Yep, South Dakota.
The Dakotas. School. And you came here about 10 years ago. Did you come here for Boeing?
Yep. So I came here to work in the defense industry. I did a PhD research in jet engines and got a chance as a domestic PhD to come to Boeing, work in the defense industry, work on cruise missiles, fighter jets, unmanned platforms. And then in 2017, when everybody thought they were going to fly to work, I got to help build a flying car and help put all that system together, which is a bunch of batteries, motors, and sensors. And then a longtime friend of mine, Alex Pfeiffer, who I grew up with in Ohio, said, hey, we are studying rail in my MBA program and looking at competitive threats of autonomous trucks, electric trucks. And what do you think happens if you take the technologies you've been building the last couple of years and apply it to trains? And that's really the genesis for how we got started.
So when are we going to start flying to work?
TBD. It looks like okay. One of those things where every year it's next year.
We keep getting promised.
Well, and it might be on a train like in Back to the Future 3.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
But it is a really cool idea. That, I mean, trains are not an anachronism. Like you said, we use them so much, but it's out of sight, out of mind. And so you're using this very modern technology and applying it to something that has existed through, you know, over a century, a couple centuries, I should say. And that really hadn't been thought of before, had it? Not on this scale.
Yeah, I think the interesting about rail is it's a super efficient, very stable business that's been getting 1-2% better every year for 150 to 200 years. Where we are at now is a ton of technologies come to fruition that makes sense to apply to rail. And it's those types of natural things where when you see this thing running, you say, this makes sense. Why didn't we do this first? And it's just a natural fit. And it's solving problems for our customers. It's providing better access to the shippers or people that are at the end of the lines, and does really give that all-in just-in-time delivery model, which everybody's talking about their same-day deliveries that they're getting from anything they order online. if I'm a business, I want that same type of service. I want things to fast and flexibly show up at my facility so that I can keep doing what I need to do to run my business or get the goods to my house and get the things where they need to go. And that's really what we provide.
And how soon before this is used for passenger rail?
Yeah, we get asked all the time. It's totally possible. In ways, you can see that this has already happened in some passenger scenarios. Like when you're at an airport, you'll see a passenger mover move around, and a lot of times that'll be unmanned. And it's odd that people are more comfortable with that scenario than moving rocks, which is where we're focusing at that other side of the spectrum. But it just that's where we as a business will focus in the near term.
And then I know you mentioned you have with the 50 people here in St. Louis, those are clients or employees?
Those are teammates that help us build this technology and bring it forward.
And that is, you've got your first on the tracks?
Yep. For a year at this point.
What is your growth projection for the next 1 year, 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah, so when we run these spreadsheets and models, it's kind of crazy because we're in hundreds and thousands of percent growth trajectory. Yeah. So it's high, and for us, it's about how much capacity can we provide and how quickly can we staff up the manufacturing and go and deliver on these units that people are asking for. And for the first several years, it was trying to get our story out and selling this word of mouth with myself and my co-founder, Alex. And now we've got inbound interest coming in, and we're going to work as hard as we can to keep up with that demand.
As we say goodbye here, Tim, a listener has texted in with a question because you are from Ohio and went to school in Michigan, wants to know if it's Buckeyes or Wolverines. I'm going to answer for him. It's Go Sparty. He went to Michigan State.
Yes.
There you go.
And I will say this. I love that you're doing this here in St. Louis. I'm a lifelong St. Louis and Ron, same thing. And I feel like this is redemption for us giving the original rail system to
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Chicago and thinking that steamboats were the way of the future. And there's this Harvard professor who wrote his thesis on the history of Chicago, whole chapter dedicated to St. Louis, going, we don't need trains. At any rate, you start this thing here and this thing blows up. I feel like this is redemption.
There you go.
So thank you.
It just took us a couple years, but we're here and we're bringing it back.
It's so St. Louis. It takes us a few years. We'll get there. Tim Lucchini, CEO of Intramotive, is very, very interesting stuff. And best of luck to you. And we're appreciative this is happening locally here in St. Louis.
No, I'll just end it with anybody out there that's listening that wants to help us build the future and help us do it here in St. Louis, reach out and we'd love to chat.
It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Ranj, did you see this? This is I'm going to read the lead from Fox 2.
Okay.
Stuntman Ronnie Rondell Jr., the man on fire in a Pink Floyd album, has died. He was 88 years old. I want to clarify that those two things are not related. That's not why he died.
He was not set on fire.
That's what it sounds like. It's not funny because he died, but it says the man on fire in a Pink Floyd album has died. He was 88. So he is the stunt man who wore a flame retardant suit and was set on fire for the cover of Pink Floyd's 1975 album, Wish You Were Here. Apparently, the wind did blow the wrong way and it burned his mustache off.
Oh, no, that's not good.
I know, but he was really a stunt man. There were also more pictures with him with more flames, but they didn't use the ones with the most flames.
So what was the headline that you had again?
Stuntman Ronnie Rondell Jr., the man on fire, has died. He was 88 years old.
Okay, so the Fox 2 story.
Yes.
It said the headline for the Fox 2 story is Man Set on Fire for Pink Floyd Album Dies in Missouri. That sounds even worse.
That sounds why he died. That's
like
a great
Pink Floyd set this guy on fire and he's dead now.
I know. And it's not funny, but that headline 100% sounds like he died in the making of the album.
Which he did not.
Man Set on Fire for Pink Floyd Album Dies in Missouri.
So, Amy, how do you feel about one day the Super Bowl, the actual NFL Super Bowl being played in the United Kingdom. How do you feel about that idea?
Oh my gosh.
Well, the
How about this? How about we have the next King of England crowned here?
Okay. So the British ambassador to the United States, Peter Mandelson, just recently said that he has made a pitch to bring the Super Bowl to the United Kingdom in the coming years. And he says, as long as he is in the job, he just wants the announcement to be made while he is still the ambassador. It doesn't have to happen while he's ambassador, but he'd like to see it happen. Now, we know the NFL's expanding. They've been playing in Germany. They played in Brazil. They played in the United Kingdom before, and they will continue to do that. But I guess I don't care if they play it in the UK.
Why?
Doesn't,
it's
same
American.
Viewing experience for me. I'm not going.
Oh, I don't like it. It's too American.
Yeah, but
it's kind of like,
it's going to be a worldwide sport, though.
Why do they want
it?
It's like Joey Chestnut in the hot dog eating contest. Let's have that in Paris.
Because
nobody would do that.
We would take the UEFA Champions League match, the Champions match here, if it was going to happen here. We'd be all over that. Or the English Premier League, we would take it. It'd be awesome. I don't care. I'm watching on TV. I'm not going. What do I care?
What a progressive viewpoint if you only care about yourself.
What? What are you talking about?
It doesn't bother me.
It doesn't bother millions and millions of people, literally, wherever it's played. It only affects like 60,000 people. All right, when we come back.
Bleeding heart progressive.
Dave Simons, partner and managing director of One Private Wealth, our weekly visit. That's next on KMOX.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.